Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. At SFO, you can discover award-winning flavors and unique shops all before takeoff. Learn more about what's at SFO at flysfo.com.
Hey, it's Avery Trufelman, host of Articles of Interest. And I've got to say, I've been a fan of KQED ever since I was a little kid, and I would come out to San Francisco to visit my grandma. It was just what we'd always turn on every time we got in the car, every time we were making dinner and turning on the radio. It was always KQED. And then over the years, I've become a massive fan of KQED podcasts because this is local reporting at its best. These are answers to questions you've always wanted to know, interviews with exciting, unusual voices, necessary journalism, all told with love and care and artistry. And did you know that a majority of KQED's funding actually comes from members? It's just people like you and me supporting the programs they love, while also getting access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. If you want to sign up and be a part of this amazing community, visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to become a member today. That's podcasts with an S. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your support.
From KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Dean Karnazes once ran 50 marathons in 50 states in 50 consecutive days. That was in 2006, not long after his memoir, Ultra Marathon Man, became a national bestseller. His new book, A Runner's High, charts Karnazes' return to the Western States 100-mile endurance run in his mid-50s. Karnazes won the Badwater Ultra Marathon and Four Deserts Ultra Marathon series. Dean Karnazes, welcome to Forum. Hi, Dean Karnazes. Are you there?
Oh, I'm so, so sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. But
I just got back from a run, so I'm running a little late, as every runner knows.
How long was your run today?
It was a quick one. It was 10 miles.
A quick 10 miles. That's so great. So if you could, because your new book is really based around this whole experience of returning to the Western States 100-mile endurance run. Could you just start by reminding listeners or telling listeners who aren't familiar with that race what it is?
Yeah, well, there's a 100-mile foot race, and it gets better than that. It's a 100-mile foot race through the Sierra Nevada. It starts at the base of Squaw Valley and finishes in the town of Auburn, which is outside of Sacramento. So it started out as a horse race, but one year a rider's horse, as the legend has it, his horse went lame. So he decided he was just going to run instead, and somehow he made it. So ever since that time, it's become a very popular race and really a contest of human willpower, because you only have 30 hours total to run 100 miles across the mountains.
And I mean, that's sort of the incredible part of it, right? Somebody can run this thing and they are literally trying to pull their bodies across that final finish line. But if, you know, with like 100 feet to go, the 30 hours is up, that's it, right? The race is over.
Yeah, no, it's a very hard cutoff. And that last hour of the race, hour 29 to 30, is called the golden hour. And I think it's ironic that five times the number of spectators come out to watch that final hour than do to watch the winner of the race. So there's so much human drama in that final hour, yes. as you said, people who are just have nothing left whatsoever, and they are just crawling literally to get to the finish line. And it's such a powerful emotional experience to witness it.
So what is your relationship to this race? What role do you feel like it has played in your life?
Oh, it's indelibly shaped my life in every way. And I think anyone who's ever run the Western States 100-mile endurance run would say the same thing. There's no way it can't become part of your identity, because it is such a powerful experience, and it is so overwhelming, and it so commands your complete attention that the experience itself is so heightened that it gets imprinted, I think, on your brain somehow.
And you talk about if you've run it, and the thing that's kind of remarkable is that, and this is something you talk about in your book, is how much being an ultra marathoner has grown. I mean, the number of people who participate in ultramarathons these days has grown exponentially in the last 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, the first year I ran an ultramarathon, I think there was 3,500 finishers in North America, and that was back in 1993. And I think last year there was close to, well, I shouldn't say last year, because last year was kind of a write-off, but in 2019, there was something like 135,000 finishers. So the race has proven, you know, the ultramarathon has become almost part of the everyday lexicon. But I would still say, Mia, that probably most of the listeners right now don't know that humans are capable of running 100 miles nonstop. I think I'm always amazed because I'm so close to it that I just assume everyone knows that ultramarathoners do these sort of things. But I don't think many people actually know this.
Really quickly, though, what do you attribute that growth to?
I think life is so easy these days. You know, why do something difficult? Because life is so easy. And, you know, I'm speaking, this is pre-pandemic, which has kind of changed, you know, everything. But I think that there was so much comfort and convenience in our lives that we long for the struggle. I think that in Western society, we got things spun around a bit. We thought if we had every comfort and convenience available, we'd be happy. And in so many ways, we're so comfortable, we're miserable. And so ultramarathoning really tests you. It really pushes you to do something that's extraordinary, and there's no shortcuts. I mean, you have to commit, you have to pay your dues. And I think there's an appeal to a certain amount of people about that.
We're talking with Dean Karnazes. His new book, A Runner's High, My Life in Motion, is releasing. It came out today, right? Today's the release date for it.
Today's. So that's why I'm honored to be here with you on the release day. Yeah.
We're really honored to have you as well. And I want to invite our listeners to join the conversation. Are you a long distance or a marathon or ultra marathon runner? Are you thinking about training for a marathon or taking up running? Tell us why. The book is called A Runner's High. So if you have any thoughts on what that means to you or what a runner's high is, give us a call, 866-733-6786. Get in touch on Twitter or Facebook at KQED Forum, or email your questions to forum@kqed.org. We're heading into the break. We've got about 30 seconds, Dean Karnazes. But why a runner's high? Why the title?
I think it just captures my life as a runner. That, you know, I came up with that title after a long run. And I just kind of had that glowing feeling of a runner's high. And I thought, what a great title for a book.
Well, we'll talk more about it after the break. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
Welcome back to Forum. We're talking with Dean Karnazes, ultramarathon runner, author of the book, A Runner's High, My Life in Motion, which charts his return to the Western States 100-mile endurance run. And we're inviting your listeners to join our conversation with Dean Karnazes, especially if you're a runner or if you're not a runner and why you are not. Let us know what it means to you. Why do you run? 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Get in touch on Twitter or Facebook at KQED Forum. Email us forum@kqed.org. Dean Karnazes, before the break, you were talking about how, especially pre-pandemic, that people were needing to challenge themselves, realizing that maybe what really was a full life was a life where you're really testing, struggling, you know, basically almost making yourself miserable, really challenging yourself in a way when you're running, because that is so much a part of that whole conversation you're having when you run, especially on a long run. And but I wonder if there are things about the pandemic, how the pandemic affected your running, that people don't realize this past year.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's magic in misery. And I think that was the case prior to the pandemic. And I think it's even heightened now. Running has experienced an amazing boom during the pandemic. More people have turned to running as a source of exercise, but also as a source of psychological renewal, emotional uplifting. It's something that anyone can do. It's very approachable, the sport. All you need to do is run. I mean, you don't need fancy, you don't need anything. You just need to start moving your feet a little bit faster than a walk. And people have found almost salvation in that. The movement, we learn a lot through the movement of our body, and we get more in touch with ourselves. And I think, at least for me, running is very cleansing, and it's very, very rejuvenating. And I think more people have experienced that during the pandemic as just a way somewhat to escape, but somewhat to renew.
Hmm. Let me go to caller Gregory in West Hollywood. Hi, Gregory.
Hi, Dean. What an honor to be running with you on this trail this morning. Longtime listener to your work and reader, and four marathons under my belt. I'm still slightly ultra. I've done longer than 26.2, but other than volume, other than just increasing volume, are you, what's your current thinking on the strength training, other than just volume, to be a successful ultra runner?
Thank you, Jeffrey, for the kind words. And you ask a very relevant question. And I'm a big proponent of cross training. I believe that just running can be a recipe for overuse injury. So I do a lot of cross training, mainly with body weight. So push-ups, pull-ups, sit-ups, chair dips, and something called burpees. And I religiously, every day, do a routine of these. You don't need weights. You don't need anything other than, willpower and discipline. But I would encourage you to cross train as much as you can to build overall muscle strength. I think that'll help with both injury prevention and recovery after a marathon or an ultramarathon.
Well, Gregory, thanks for the question and good luck. Pete writes, the best highs I've had, I'm talking endorphins, have come from efforts of fairly high intensity, but shorter distances like 10Ks and intense sets in the pool or intervals on the bike. Dean's high is surely different physiologically. How would he describe it?
No, I would concur. I think that if I run 4 miles, 5 miles fast and hard, I definitely get a runner's high. I think it's in response to, how much you really punish yourself in some ways. And the difference with running an ultra marathon is that runner's high can last for 3 or 4 or 5 days after an ultra marathon, which is so counterintuitive because, the days after an ultra marathon, you can barely get out of bed. you're hobbled, but you're just in this euphoria. I don't know how else to explain it. It's just this tremendous euphoria. And, it's something about the experience and the accomplishment, but I think there's more to it. I think there's something chemical going on.
One of the things that I was struck by in reading your book is you talk about how the depth of talent that's growing, the number of people that are doing it, and just the experience really overall of being an ultramarathon runner or a long distance runner, is that it's changed your priorities. You mentioned things like, you're no longer focused on being fast, but you are relentless. You talk about endurance versus speed. And I'm wondering if you think, even though we were just talking about these short sets and things, that what defines a runner, or if endurance has a little bit over speed when it comes to what defines a runner in your view.
Well, I have a saying, endurance comes from enduring. So how do you build endurance? You run an ultra marathon and you endure, and that's how you build and learn what endurance is about. And, you know, to me, I've always been more interested in how far I can go versus how fast I can go. And that is certainly the case as I'm, you know, maturing. I don't want to say growing old, but as I'm maturing, you know, it's all about endurance. How do I continue being a runner and running marathons and ultra marathons into my 60s, my 70s, my 80s, and hopefully my 90s? So it's all about now is about endurance. And, you know, I still, you know, measure my race performance, but I'm more concerned with just reaching the finish line and getting up the next day and doing the same thing. So to me right now, it's a game of showing up, you know, showing up and running the race, not winning the race. And does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. I'm just curious about how you weigh those things, speed versus endurance, and whether or not you feel like endurance defines a runner more than speed. But I think the other piece of this, and you can say something about that if you want, the other piece of this I'm wondering is if also that's just a function of age.
Yeah, well, it's well known that as you age, you get slower.
Right.
And it, I mean, nothing holds a mirror up to you like running. I mean, it's very obvious that you know, your performance, your race performance declines. And to me, that's just meant working twice as hard to, you know, run twice as slow. But, you know, at most of these races, there are age group categories.
Right.
And so you can win your age group category. But honestly, I think the only people that they care about who's won the age group category are people in that age group. No one else cares.
Let me go to caller Fernanda in San Jose. Hi, Fernanda.
Hi. I'm so excited. I'm so nervous because I love you so much. And anyway, my question was, I'm an ultra runner. I started running in my 40s. I'm right now 47. And I just ran my first ultra marathon, actually last year before COVID. And I wanted to know a little bit about your nutrition and what do you do in preparation to the race, but also to what do you do in general? I'm a vegan, and I know that it has increased my endurance, but at the same time, I want to know what is your kind of like preparation before a race as far as nutrition goes.
Fernanda, thanks.
Yeah, and again, thank you for the kind comments. I hope we can share some footsteps together one day. But you ask a good question. You know, I will say that people change over time, especially with diet. I'll never live down the story of one time ordering a pizza delivered on the run. I was on a 200-mile run by myself, and I ran out of food, and I had a cell phone and a credit card. So I ordered a pizza delivered to me, you know, roadside as I was running, and just rolled it up into this big Italian burrito and ate it as I ran. And people say, how did you eat an entire pizza while you're running? You know, running 200 miles, I was running for, you know, 2 days straight. So, you know, all the energy gels and and the goos and all of that.
We're going to do
it. You know, get a little old, yeah. But, you know, now I've quote unquote cleaned up my diet. So I always say, I tell people if I can't dig it from the earth or pick it from a tree or catch it with my hands, I don't eat it. So nothing processed or refined. All, you know, I tried being a vegan. I tried being entirely plant-based, and it didn't work well with me. So I've added animal protein, mostly from the sea. So I get most of my protein from fish and seafood. And I don't change my diet at all prior to an ultra marathon. I used to pasta load, you know, as most runners do, you know, you go to the pasta feed the night before and you eat as much pasta as you can. Well, what happens is you show up at the starting line the next morning, completely bloated, feeling stuffed to the gills. So I just eat the same meal I eat, you know, before an ultra marathon. I do cut back on the amount of fiber in my diet, especially the insoluble. You know, there's two types of fiber. There's soluble and insoluble, you know, the kind of fiber that passes right through you. I cut back on foods that are high in insoluble fiber for obvious reasons. And that's all I do in preparation. And then during an ultra marathon, you know, I'll drink electrolyte replenishment. You know, I work with a company called Hammer Nutrition, and they make energy bars and energy gels, which are little packets, like squeeze packets that look like honey. That comes out, but especially formulated for endurance runners.
You mentioned carbo loading and people doing pasta and things like that. What would you say is the most stubborn running myth that you constantly encounter? Is it that one? Is it something else?
I would say that one. I mean, people have this, you know, and still runners, a lot of runners that aren't experienced still think this is true. You know, eat bagels and pancakes, you know, the morning of the race. And to me, that just makes you bloated. So
yeah.
The other thing that always kills me is, you know, during a 5K run, which is 3 miles, 3.1 miles, I'll show up at the starting line and there'll be people with hydration packs on filled with, you know, hundreds of gel packs, like, ooh, I'm going to tackle this thing. And I'm thinking, you don't need to eat or drink anything during a 5K race. I mean, you don't need all those calories.
Right.
And then I guess the most stubborn cliche I've ever heard is, you know, run, Forrest, run. If I hear that yelled out the window again, I'm just going to slit my throat.
Yeah, I've often wondered, actually, what is like the weirdest or coolest thing that someone has said to you along the side of the race? Because one of the things that's so amazing about running is that people can get really close to you. They're just standing right there as you're running by, especially as you're heading towards the finish where most people tend to gather. And I'm wondering if there's something that someone said that's really stayed with you.
Oh, you know, there's a lot of, like, during big marathons, like the New York City Marathon or the San Francisco Marathon, there's a lot of, you know, signs that people make, you know, to kind of inspire runners. And someone said, this is a few years ago, and I'll date it, but they said, if Trump can run, it can't be that hard.
We're talking with Dean Karnazes, ultramarathon runner. His new book is A Runner's High, My Life in Motion. And you, our listeners, are with us, and you're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Suman in San Jose, join us. Hi, Suman.
Hi. Hello. I've been running for about 2 years now. I ran like 1,000 miles last year. I pretty much ran every day. I can run like 16, 17 miles, but I've been hitting my peak where, you know, I run into tightness and stiffness, knots and stuff, but, you know, I work them, massage them. It just, those breaks kind of kill him. Is there any techniques that I should use?
Suman, thanks.
I hate to say this because no one likes to hear it, but ice baths work wonders. If you can fill your ice tub with cold water, you know, and ice cubes and soak in that, that really helps a lot. Magnesium. So like an Epsom salt or oral magnesium can help with recovery. I think that's one nutrient that is coming to the forefront is missing in a lot of runners' diets. And you absorb magnesium through your skin as well if you mix Epsom salt with the water. Those are two things I would recommend. Also, cross training. I'll get back to cross training, and, you know, if you can start with 5 burpees, you know, 3 times a day and increase it to 10 burpees 3 times a day. And if you can get up to 25 burpees, I think that'll really help with that stiffness you're encountering in the later stages of your run.
What are burpees?
You have to Google it, and people that know what a burpee is, everyone's just, oh no, there it goes again with burpees. But it's basically you're standing on your feet, you plop down to your hands, you do a push-up, you jump back up to your feet, and then you jump up in the air and you clap your hands, and that's one.
Mm.
And it might sound easy describing it, but most people can't do 2 in a row because most people can't even do a single push-up. And, you know, I start every day with 25 burpees.
Yeah, it doesn't sound easy even when you're describing it. We go next to Sarah in San Mateo. Hi, Sarah. Join us.
Hi, thank you. I just want to say I think that this is such a tremendous, amazing thing that all of you ultramarathoners do, not being an ultramarathoner myself. I just wonder how it seems the preparing, the running, the recovery, all the time involved, how does this fit into having time for relationships or family life? I'm just wondering how that works out.
Sarah, thanks.
Yeah, no, that's a valid question. And, you know, my family always comes first. I'm a very dedicated husband and father. In fact, I married my high school sweetheart. We met when we were 14 and we're still together and our relationship is still wonderful. And I've always brought my children with me. You know, I've been on all 7 continents twice now. And I've always taken my kids and my family along with me whenever I could on these adventures. So they've been to Australia, They've been to South America. We've been to Canada many times, all over Europe. One time I ran 50 marathons in all of the 50 US states in 50 consecutive days. And I took them and my parents with me. And we just had the best time. I mean, how many kids, my son was 9 at the time and my daughter 11, how many kids get to travel to all of the US states? So I've made it very much a family activity, and I don't just take them to a race and me run the race and then we come home. I always plan a lot of non-running activities and sightseeing so that we all enjoy ourselves.
Well, Hunter writes, my dear friend Peter from SF is in his 60s and a former alcoholic who heard of Dean's running feats and it inspired him to turn his life around. He's now healthy and an avid runner and tells me all the time how much Dean helped him. So much so that Peter got a tattoo of Dean on his arm and he showed it to Dean at a race. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I think I know exactly who Peter is. He's fanatical. Yes, I know who Peter is. Cool. It's funny. I've had people have runners are passionate individuals, and they've tattooed quotes of mine all over their body. But Peter, I met him at, I think, the Beta Breakers. He said, would you mind writing your name, like signing your name on my arm? And he had like a Sharpie, like a regular Sharpie. So I signed my name on his arm. And then I think I saw him at the San Francisco Marathon like a year later. And he's like, check out my tattoo. And he lifted it up and he had literally had that my signature tattooed on his arm.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. He's an amazing guy. I mean, he was a former alcoholic. I mean, he completely turned his life around. Yeah.
Incredible story. Well, AJ writes, I used to be a distance runner, not a competitive one and not on Dean's level by any stretch. But after years of chronic health problems, I've finally given up the hope that I will ever run again. I just wanted to share that it stays with you. I still sometimes run in my dreams and I wake up with a trace of that sense of freedom. What would you do, Dean, if you couldn't run?
Yeah, you gave me the chills reading that. I mean, I define my finish line as a pine box. I mean, I'm not going to stop until I'm 10 feet under. I'm not sure what I would do.
Well, Dean Karnazes, your new book, A Runner's High, it was really, really quite moving, I have to say. So thanks so much for writing it and for joining us to talk about it today.
Mina, thank you for having me run by.
And congratulations on its release. Thanks also to our listeners for their questions and comments for both segments today. Caroline Smith produced both of them for us. You have been listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.